sometimes if that which is visual has a little more impact, whether it does, who knows? Well, I know you're not gonna believe me, but I tried a couple of times in a phone before I got here, and I just last Sunday, what I talked about was the garment. Remember that? Yeah. And we're looking at that passage in Matthew 22 about this tenacious, passionate, contending activity of the king in the parable of inviting people to come to the wedding. And he was so deliberate that he kept sending out people to keep inviting people to come. And so when the banquet hall is full, he's walking through, looking at that. We have a sense of pleasure, and then he comes upon an individual who doesn't have a wedding garment on and says to them, how did you get in here without a wedding garment? And it said in that parable in Matthew 22 that the person was speechless. They had nothing to say. Remember that? So from there, it was just taking that and then poking around some various passages dealing with that whole notion of the garment. And my presumption was that many of you are familiar with that parable and that you've probably heard a variety of homilies over the years. And I know it's one of those parables that wasn't proclaimed today.
That at some point at first reading, if there are some things that we don't understand about that, we could almost come across as thinking, and I kind of alluded to it even though I didn't say it, that the king seemed to be a little almost mean, you know, because here's an individual without a wedding garment. He says, how did you get in here without the wedding garment? Person speechless, and so he gets thrown out. And so you would think, maybe he forgot it, right? Maybe somebody else was supposed to bring it and they forgot to bring it. Maybe he was too poor and he couldn't afford it, so he couldn't buy one. Maybe when he got there and put it on and thought, oh, it's ripped, it's messy, it's dirty, I don't want to go in there looking like this. But he felt that he wanted to be the wedding celebration. And so we come up with kind of a litany of excuses of, to a certain extent, almost wanting to put the king a little bit on trial, even maybe taking a little bit of offense at him as to why he was acting the way that he was. Until we begin to maybe understand a little bit about that culture and recognize that it was very common, and I did say this last week, it was very common for the host to have some wedding garments provided at the door, so if someone came in that didn't have one, they could be handed one, right? And then they could put that on and come in with that wedding garment on. And so that kind of changed the whole focus when all of a sudden you realize, oh, wow, so he could have put it on, but he chose not to. And so we're left kind of speculating, like, I wonder why he didn't put it on. And as with the way that Jesus can teach, is we're left to a certain extent wondering objectively why he didn't put that on. And then at some point, do we collapse the distance between the parable and ourselves and say, so where am I in this? Where am I in this parable? And is this... Is this anything about me, or where's so-and-so in this parable? And so there's that thing of beginning to collapse that distance between ourselves and that and start to kind of examine it a bit. And so, as I said last Sunday, what I tried to do was poke around a little bit at looking at that whole notion of a garment. And So I was thinking of those jigsaw pieces, you know. We looked at the woman who'd had that bleeding for 12 years. And she comes up behind Jesus, and he has this crowd around him. And she thinks, if I just touch his garment, I will be healed. And so we looked at that passage about she reached out and touched his garment, and then Jesus stopped and says, who touched me? Because I felt power go out from me. And she realized she was instantly healed. And then looking, that was in Mark chapter 5, and then in Mark chapter 6, beginning at verse 53 through 56, it mentions that it infers that healing account had such an impact upon the region that people began to bring all those who were ill and had need of deliverance or healing or whatever that was going on. They would lay them in the marketplace, and just wanting to touch the hem of his garment, and everybody who touched the hem of his garment was healed. Because that whole thing had been so talked about, like, that's amazing. Jesus just comes by and all these sick people, he doesn't even have to say a word to them. If they just reach out and touch his garment, they're healed. That message just changed. I mean, it was a game changer. Because it said whatever villages or cities or areas or towns he went into, and it specifically says in there that they laid him in the marketplace. Then we looked at something that was almost kind of like something that was very unusual, and that was that scene of Peter in John chapter 21, that post-resurrection appearance where Peter is out fishing in the Sea of Galilee, and they've been fishing all night, haven't caught a thing. And if you go back in the scriptures, you realize that's happened before to them, where they've been fishing all night and haven't caught a thing. And Jesus is standing on the shore, but the disciples don't recognize who he is. And he says to them, children, have you caught anything yet? And then he says, throw your net on the other side. And they throw the net on the other side, and they catch so many fish that they need to have help drawing it in. And it even mentions a number, if you're familiar with that passage. It even mentions a specific number as to how many they caught. And then the beloved disciple whom we would understand, most scholars would say, and I would agree, is John. He says, it's the Lord. And at that point, that was that passage we looked at, John chapter 21, verse 7, where it says, Peter had taken his garment off, and when he heard it was the Lord, he put his garment on and then jumped into the water. Or if you like, plunged into the water. It's counterintuitive. And so I'd ask the question about, have any of you ever been swimming before? And typically, if you would go swimming, instead of putting clothes on, you would tend to take stuff off. So it's counterintuitive to say that he put this garment on and then jumped into the water. So when he gets up on the beach in front of Jesus, he has his garment back on, soaking wet, having plunged into the water. See all the implications? All the implications that are there. And then ended by looking at that tremendous scene in Zechariah chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, where it says that Joshua, as a high priest, is standing there, and the enemy comes to accuse him and accuse him. And he's standing there with this filthy, filthy garment on. And it says that the Lord rebukes the enemy and says, take that filthy garment on him and put on a new one. So the idea was just kind of poking around in that passage to look at various aspects of this whole notion of garment with the intention of trying to kind of connect the dots a little bit. And I don't know if you felt, at least for those of you who were here, that they got connected a bit. Some of you might walked away and go, I'm not really sure what he was trying to say. Others might have said, I need to think about that. But I also had mentioned this last Sunday, too, about what garment are any one of us wearing today? I mean, what garment did you come in wearing today? Did you come in wearing your wedding garment? Did you come in without a garment? Did you come in with a garment that was stained a bit? Did you come in with a garment that's dripping wet? What kind of garment did you come in with? And so I had suggested, you know, that in my own life, I have found this valuable, and I've been doing this for, I don't know how many years, years and years and years and years. Every 2 weeks that I go to confession. So I go through this list. Have you been with a woman? And maybe the woman would be asking this, have I been with a man? Have you been with a woman anywhere since we last met that might be seen as compromising? Have any of your financial dealings lacked integrity? Have you exposed yourself to any sexually explicit material? Have you allowed worldly concerns to distract you from your relationship with God? Have you expressed your anger, envy, or pride in a manner that is unbecoming for a Christian? Have you spent adequate time in Bible study and prayer? Have you given priority time to your family? Have you fulfilled the mandates of your calling? Have you taken adequate care of your body? Have you just lied to me? And instead of that in any way stirring up condemnation or guilt or shame, to be able to approach the Lord and say, here I am again. Here I am again. Would you just clean this up so I can put it back on? Just clean it up so I can put it back on. And the whole notion that when we hear his words spoken in our midst, even when we extend the sign of peace, when we come up for communion and we touch the Lord in communion, the body and blood of the Lord, we touch him in communion. Heaven touches earth. And in that process, there's this cleansing that occurs. This cleansing, this union that is reinvigorated. And the Lord can say, I am so glad you came. And you are beautiful to me. Because the invitation's always there. He's tenacious about that, continuing to invite us. So let me poke around in this notion about the garment a little bit more. Again, just kind of asking the question, what garment do you have on today? And remember that I had suggested to you as a priest, I get this idea, and so does Father Don and the deacons and the acolytes and others, is we get to dress up, right? Well, we all have one. But the notion is, in my being dressed up, is what I'm covered with is hopefully also what's going on the inside. So what goes on behind closed doors? What goes on where nobody can see? Where nobody knows, this is still on. It's still on. Because there's no hiding from him, right? There's no hiding from him ever. Every thought that goes across that focus of our brain, he knows it all, not to condemn, not to do shame, not to do guilt, but he knows. He knows it all. He knows it all. And to have this and recognize, oh, Lord, I need to have this on all the time, even when I'm fishing. So consider some of this in regards to how important it is, this garment that the Lord wants to give us. So I was thinking about this whole thing, and I got I got spending more time with this. I thought I was going someplace completely different today, but it just seems like I was drawn back to this. I was really going to focus on the gospel. I thought that would be a fun one to deal with. But we'll do that some other time. In John chapter 13, it says, "Now before the feast of the Passover, beginning in verse 1, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And supper being ended, the devil having already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper and laid aside his garments, took a towel, and girded himself." Isn't that interesting? He laid aside his garments. I believe I've shared this with you, and I'm sure you've heard it before, that when Jesus begins to wash the disciples' feet, that there was a hierarchy of slaves. And the lowest of the lowest slave was the one who washed the feet. They were the lowest on the rank. They were the lowest of the low. And the notion was, within Judaism, is when you're out there walking in the marketplace and walking in the world, that you may be walking over where someone has walked. And you may be walking where someone has walked, and maybe that person who just passed by is an individual who was very unclean. They were involved in sinfulness, and so have you ever heard the expression, "Boy, you really stepped in it"? It's like you just maybe stepped in where somebody had just stepped, and that whole kind of atmosphere and all that is out there, and so you're getting that on you. And so when you come into a dwelling, then the lowest of the lowest slaves, you would sit down and they would come and gravel at your feet and wash your feet to wash all of that stain that you may have picked up out there. That was their job. That's what they did. And so, see, when Jesus leans down, takes off his garments, and begins to wash the disciples' feet, remember when Peter says, "You're not going to wash my feet." And Jesus said, "If I don't wash you, you have no part with me." And then Peter says, "Then wash my head and my hands and my body. Wash everything then." He said, "I just wash your feet. That's enough." Think about that. He laid aside his garment to wash the disciples' feet. There's that great Christological hymn in Philippians chapter 2, beginning at verse 6, where it says that Jesus, I'm paraphrasing it, laid down his divinity so as to take on our humanity. He took off the cloak of his divinity so to take on our humanity, to take on this equipment. It says in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 6, that we have this compassionate high priest who has been tempted in every way as we are, yet did not sin. Therefore, we can confidently and boldly approach the throne of grace to find help in time of need, because he understands everything about us. He understands it all. So he lays aside his garment, gets down and begins to wash the disciples' feet, taking off his divinity so as to enter into the fullness of our humanity. Does that make sense to you? So, still again, poking a little bit around the garment, consider this. In Matthew chapter 27, it says, "Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole garrison around him, and they stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him." They stripped him. "When they had twisted a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and a reed in his right hand, and they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, 'Hail, King of the Jews.' Then they spat on him, took the reed, and struck him on the head, And when they had mocked him, they took the robe off him and put his own clothes on him and led him away to be crucified. Again, just thinking of the whole notion of garment taken off and put on, and think, Jesus takes off his garment, washes the disciples' feet, and then all of a sudden, he's in this scene where he is being judged and tried and mocked, and they strip him of his clothes. They put this scarlet cloak on him. They mock him, they spit on him, they hit him, they pull his beard, they do all of this, put this crown of thorns. And after they're done, they take that scarlet robe off of him and they put his clothes back on him. Wow, the whole thing of laying down his divinity, taking on our humanity. Amazing. And then it says later in this passage in Matthew, it'll say, and when they had come to a place called Golgotha, that is to say, place of a skull, they gave him sour wine mingled with gall to drink, but when he had tasted it, he would not drink. Then they crucified him and divided his garments, casting lots, that it might be fulfilled which is spoken by the prophet. They divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. So again, to just start poking around that and saying, what does all this mean, Lord? Why does that keep showing up? Keep showing up in the scriptures about the taking on and off of clothes, the taking on and off of garment. And even in our own lives, how do we do that? How do we navigate through that about keeping that garment on or taking it off? And what has the Lord done? And does the Lord take off his divinity so as to take on the fullness of her humanity, being able to say, I know everything about you. I know everything. Isn't it fascinating that when Jesus called those first disciples to him, and so follow me here, just remembering that before we do anything as Christians, it's first and foremost always begins with relationship, right? Jesus calls us to himself first, and then he will give us an assignment, because our destiny and who we are in him has to be so secure. Our foundation, our identity in him has to be so secure before we get out there and do anything. Jesus calls these disciples unto himself. And remember, Jesus never did anything that he did not see the Father doing, or he never said anything that he did not hear the Father say. And there's times I have, in my pointed little head, speculated about, I wonder if the Lord, when he was looking at the disciples that the Father was calling and saying, I want you to call him and him and him, and these other ladies are going to be following you too, and these are the ones that I want. If Jesus ever looked up and said, really? You want Matthew, the tax collector, and Simon, the zealot? You want Peter the fisherman and Nathaniel Bartholomew the intellect? Wow. You want those? Yeah, I know everything about them. I know everything about them. Because the Father in Jesus through the Holy Spirit is always on a treasure hunt. He's always on a treasure hunt. And so when the Lord looks at our garment that at times gets a bit stained, or maybe even when we took it off, and he might very gently whisper to us and say, put it back on. Don't go walking around here with your garment off, because you're going to be more vulnerable than you realize. You need to put it on. And if it's a bit dirty here, give it to me. I'll clean it up and give it back. But he's always on a treasure hunt. So again, if you're kind of following me here, you know, when we're just looking at this, looking at the whole thing of the garment on and the garment off, what if we were to go to that first reading from Isaiah? What if we were to look at that first reading from Isaiah? What is that? Chapter 45, verses 1 through 7. And what if, just for kicks and grins, where it says, Thus says the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have held, to subdue nations before him and loose the armor of kings, to open before him the double door so that the gates will not be shut. I will go before you and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of bronze and cut the bars of iron. I will give you the treasures of darkness and hidden riches of secret places, that you may know that I, the Lord, who call you by your name, am the God of Israel. What if you took that name, Cyrus, and you took it out? And so I'm collapsing the distance. You took it out and you put your name in. And you begin to look at that from the perspective of going, wow, if he's on a treasure hunt, he knows our humanity, right? He knows everything about us. And he's on this treasure hunt to continue to reveal the fullness of who he is, to say, I have so many things to show you, and I know you, and I know everything about you, and I know when it is that you take it off, and I know when it is that you get dirty. I know all about that. But I'm on this treasure hunt to bring you, to bring you, to bring you, to bring you to all these things that I want to show you, because I love you so desperately. That 1 Corinthians chapter 13, love is patient, love is kind. You know that one that's used in marriages a lot? You know, for weddings? See, it's another example of taking a passage like that. For example, First Corinthians chapter 13. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely. See, if we were to take a passage like that and instead of use the word love, put in there Jesus. Jesus suffers long and is kind. Jesus does not envy. Jesus does not parade himself. He's not puffed up. He does not behave rudely. He does not seek his own, is not provoked. He thinks no evil. He does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. And what if we were to take a passage like that and go back to it and say, wow, that's how the Lord deals with me. That's how the Lord deals with you. Jesus suffers long with you. Jesus is kind with you. He loves you. He does not become in any way irritated or frustrated by being envious. He doesn't behave rudely towards you. He's not provoked by you, and he thinks no evil. He does not rejoice in any wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. And what if all of a sudden you were to begin to take that passage and say, what if I started looking at myself in that way? That's how he also wants me to start looking at myself, because of his grace, because of that garment that he's put on. And what if all of a sudden I begin to realize, I start looking at that passage and say, and that's how he wants me to start looking at others. That's how he wants me to start all of a sudden looking at others that are in the marketplace and around me. That's how he wants me to start seeing others. That I see them as maybe who they could be versus who I think they are. See, the Lord is always on a treasure hunt. The Lord knows all about us, but he's always wanting to call forth. He's always wanting to call forth that which is there that he wants to reveal, to say, this is what I'm doing. That's what I want you to see. And this stuff that gets you all confused and befuddled and all that, I know that. Would you just give it to me? Would you just give it to me? Let me clean it. Let me put that garment back on you. And let me continue to call forth, call forth, call forth that which is there, this treasure that I want to reveal, and to begin to give you eyes when you walk around and look at others and to say, oh, my Lord, Lord, do you want to call forth the treasure in others? Would it be possible that you could use me to start all of a sudden having the eyes that you have and to be able to see what you're doing to start to call forth that treasure in others? That word that Linda had for me, is that calling forth a treasure? That word that Father Don had, this whole notion of there's these pieces of puzzles and it's all to do with putting it together to make, because that's your heart? Because he wants that to shine, he wants to show something, and all of a sudden you're out, and instead of becoming this looking at the stains, all of a sudden you start saying, what is it that the Lord wants to call forth? What's the treasure that he wants to call forth? And what if he were to use me to do that? And I say, yeah, I know you're messed up. And I know you're probably walking where you shouldn't need to walk, but I know that the Lord has more for you. I know that he has more. I know that he has more. God, let me see it. How do I call that forth? How can you use me as an instrument of your grace to all of a sudden, with Cyrus so completely blown away, it's like the Lord can say, you don't even know me, Cyrus. You may have heard about me, but you don't even know me. And I'm going to do this for you, even so. And we proclaim to know him, right? We proclaim to know him and to think he wants to do so much, not only in us, so that we can do that for others. Amen? Peace of the Lord be with you. Let's offer one another a sign of Christ's peace.